Welcome to the American Classroom podcast, where we discuss the role of education in building a civil society. I'm Jared Taylor. I'm here with my host, Lindsay Croslin.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Great. And we have a special guest, Kelly Smith, with us. How are you doing, Kelly?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about micro schools today in our series of school choice. So let's get started. Kelly, you're a great leader in the micro school industry, and we want to learn a little bit about that. Our listeners are interested in what builds great Americans, and you're a great leader in this space. So let's just maybe begin here a little bit by, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure.
And your journey into education.
Yeah, happy to share. So I'm a, call it a lifelong learner. I was always interested in solving problems and puzzles and figuring things out, trying things. I was one of those kids that did well in school, but almost made a game of trying not to learn. You know, I felt like if I could get the A with the minimum amount of work. And so I did that all the way through, ended up in, you know, good grades and scholarships and all of that. And later got to this point where I realized, you know, I'm really not fulfilling what's possible for me as a learner and as a person. I needed to dig a little bit to find out what I really care about. And ultimately that led me to the world of education. So I'd done a whole career in technology, raising a family. I've got four kids, and I got to a point where I had been teaching kids computer programming as a side thing at the library, just right over here in Mesa, Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Seeing kids come to life with learning, and I felt that there's something here. There's something that needs to be pursued. So that's where I got a little crazy, pulled my kid out of school, talked to my friends, they pulled their kids out of school, and pretty soon we had seven kids around my kitchen table, called it a micro school, and that was a new format for a lot of us, had some homeschooly elements and some structured elements, and we put it together. It ended up being such a transformative experience for everybody that I've never looked back, and that's now 6+ years ago.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's a big deal, being on the forefront of something that I think is really catching on. But I think micro schools might be a little fuzzy for some of our listeners. Maybe define that.
Sure.
And maybe place it in this whole thing called K-12 education. And where does it fit? What's the role?
Yeah, you can find people talking about the same words in different ways. So for me, it's important to focus on the obvious part, which is the word micro. The prefix micro usually means small, right? So some people will put 50 kids in a school and have two traditional classrooms and call it a micro school. I think what I would say is that's really a mini school. That's not fully a micro school. Micro schools are very organic. They tend to crop up around one passionate adult. So you think of what we call a guide, an educator that steps in and says, I can provide this learning environment for a small group of kids. We think of about 10. They're meeting in an informal space often. So that could be a community center, a conference room in an office. We have a meeting in dance studios and all kinds of places, public libraries, churches. And then a lot of them are just in somebody's house, right? Like my initial micro school was in my house. And it's that 10 kids and really a model that's designed. And this is maybe the next step of micro school is, to me, it's a place where you can do some of the innovation in education that structurally isn't possible or easy in a larger group. You can really personalize things. You can push for mastery as opposed to just, you know, were you in your chair for this unit and did you get a C or more on the test, right? So some of those things are possible in a micro school setting that you really can't do in traditional. And then we do a ton of creativity. There's project-based learning, there's inquiry, the kids are debating and doing Socratic discussions and things like that. So it's really a format for learning that brings people to life, made possible by small numbers in an informal space.
Well, I love how your language is emphasizing outcomes.
Right.
Because you have the flexibility in that model to focus more on outcomes, which is, at the end of the day, that's what matters, not seat time.
Right.
Right? Not some checklist of, you know, some national standard or something like that, right? What's really happening? What's the point of education? No, that's great.
Yeah, and this innovative idea satisfied kind of like a homeschool, small school, like job for parents who needed that for their children, because every child has a different learning style.
It's super interesting because people want to put it in a bucket, right? Is this homeschool? Well, no. I mean, we're doing basically standards aligned math and English in a way that's probably more rigorous. We see kids making more progress than they would in a traditional classroom. A lot of kids that come in behind, for example, set goals and then they you know, they work on their goals. We see kids moving 2-3 grade levels in a year on some of those core subjects. Plus they're, you know, writing and producing their own play or publishing a novel or doing all these things. So, you know, it's rigorous learning in a way that, you know, I think people are like, whoa, that's different, but it is flexible and it's driven by a student's interests in a way that's much harder to do if you've got, you know, 30-1 or something going in a classroom.
Yeah,
no, that's great. And you, so you're the CEO and founder of Prenda,
right?
Which is great. And before that, it sounds like you took the easy road in college and studied physics and fusion and, you know, easy stuff like that, right?
I was good at school, and that's what you do. You just kind of go to the next. It's like playing a video game. It's like, I passed that level, so what's the next level? And pretty soon I was literally staring at my laser one day as a grad student at MIT. So I'm really driving hard, and it's the math's hard, the science is hard. I'm doing all this work, and I'm looking at this laser and thinking, this is fun, but like, is this what I want to spend my life? And everyone around me, it was an academic track, you know, publishing papers, and I would go to these conferences, and no one cared, you know, about the work I was doing. It's a very niche thing, and I just got to this point where it's like, what do I want? You know, and no one had asked me that question. I hadn't asked myself that question. And so it ended up blowing up my perception from what's typically a pretty one-dimensional view of education. It's like, well, here's the metrics and the test scores. It's like, check all the boxes. And, you know, my grandpa paid me for A's. It was a great thing. I was, you know, I knew how to play that game, but it never occurred to me to think, who am I? What's my unique contribution? What can I actually do in the world? And I would love for lots more people asking that question. And I believe that the answers are going to be very widely diverse. You know, you're going to get lots of different answers instead of everybody saying, you know, I'm going to be a 97% in math and I'm going to be a 96% in math. It's like, maybe I want to create sculptures out of trash, you know, and I think it's great. I would love for more people to be doing lots of different things.
Yeah, that's huge.
Please. So do you feel like Prenda or microschools in general really satisfy, like, do they ask those questions to kids? Like, some people might, you know, associate with Montessori, right? What do you want to learn about? What's interesting to you? Instead of being like, here's the curriculum we're learning this month, and then you plow through it.
Yeah, it's agency at the core, and that's for us. There are microschools that are very, very much just like, this is the escalator and we're going to drive you on the, a lot of private schools do this. It's like the website says, like, uses Harvard colors, and it's like, we're going to get you into Harvard. That's the sell, right? And you can, parents want that. And there's people that want to go that route. We're really saying let's back up a little bit. Let's look more broadly at what it means to be a human, a learner, an American, as you guys are exploring on this podcast, and to say, okay, if I want to be the best version of me that's possible, it starts with know myself. It starts with a lot of connection and psychological safety in an environment where it's not about constant, you know, judging and chopping down. And you create that environment very deliberately, right? I was just in a micro school yesterday. I walk in there and I talk to a girl that's 11, and she's been a struggling reader for a long time, right? And you're 11. It's like, if you're sitting in traditional classrooms, you're being basically beaten over the head with the books by that point, because it's like, move on when reading and all these rules and all these things. And it's like, this girl felt it, of course, you know, she's not stupid. She's like, I get that you want me to read, but it was just a struggle. It was hard for her. She didn't love it. It almost built its own system of anxiety inside of her brain, because it's just like so much negativity. And she told me about being in a space where she was allowed some more options, a little bit more choice. She found a series for young adults that she just in love with, and she became a reader, like, almost like that, but she had to get there and decide. And now she's caught up by all the measures. You know, we can see her performing differently on the tests, but it's because she had something that she was interested in. And, you know, you see those stories over and over and over.
I love that.
Gives her a lot of tailwind.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. I remember getting to that point in my career. I was at Honeywell and in corporate HR, doing a lot of cool tech stuff, managing over $1 billion of spend. And people, you know, that used to be cool when you're an undergrad, right? But then I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm just building car parts and airplane parts, right? And the opportunity to come work with my dad at Heritage to build young men and young women and build communities, I mean, that's just a bigger opportunity.
So great. Yeah.
And that's why I did it. And I that resonates with me, what you just said. And I always love the old Socrates phrase, an unexamined life is not worth living. So credit you guys in getting down to the core essence of knowledge and truth and discovery, because that's where it all starts. They don't know themselves. They're not going to go invent the next, you know, tech wave or literary wave or art wave.
But yeah.
I want to come back to your tech background, because when you did the coding, your experience at MIT and then coding, Prenda in your micro school has a tech edge that I don't think a lot of people understand. And I thought maybe you could share a little bit about how you've brought technology into this education fusion to really help drive these outcomes.
I get this question a lot. You know, basically what I did in 2018 with our first micro school was, it was as human as you can possibly get in the way that all great educators do, right? You basically have, I had in my case, seven pupils, seven kids, different age levels, different skill levels, different interests. The puzzle before me was, how can I unlock learning, or in Plutarch's word, kindle a fire, right? How can I help kindle a fire for these seven kids? And it happened one by one in ways that were not controlled by me, like created the conditions and then worked with them, and I could see it happen. It's like, nope, now they love learning. I can see that. They show up differently, get to the point where they're sad about spring break by March because they love school so much they don't want to be gone from their friends and from this environment. So you get to that level of output. So it's human, right? And my question at the time was like, and I was getting this from friends, how do you do that? What's the system? And I feel, and I still feel this way, that there are millions of people out there, probably some of them listening to this right now, right, that would be great in an environment, a micro school environment, an adult who could truly do that for children, for a group of 10 kids. They could really change trajectories. And I think they want to. I think there's something yearning within them that says, I want to be that grown up for these kids. The question, of course, goes to kind of, we find two buckets of questions. One of them is, okay, but I've never maybe led a classroom before. I have no, you know, formal education background. I love kids. I'm good with kids, but I'm not an expert educator, right? And so that's where, well, we can help, right? What if we put this together in a way that we lay out a system of standards aligned curriculum and goals and a system for kids to step in and learn? You can always tailor it, you know, make it flexible. So
that's great.
We give you something out of the box. So that was kind of
puzzling. They can focus on what they're good at.
Absolutely.
What they know, their experience.
But it doesn't require them standing up in front of the room as the like know-all of all subjects. The kids are learners. Your job is to be there as a guide on the side, as they say, that's helping them unlock passion for learning.
Nice.
So that was the first puzzle. The second puzzle was actually business related or structural. It's like, okay, this person also probably has never run a company before. They're not like going to open their own school. If you look at what it takes to run a charter school, and you guys know this well, you've written some charter applications. It's a 2-year process. It's hundreds of pages of stuff. It's very, you know, regulatory entwined. There's lots of work. And most people are just frankly never going to do it. So how can we take that barrier way down for them to say, look, go to your neighbors and friends, find a group of 10 kids, maybe some of them are your own kids, put together a micro school group, and we will help you, you know, collect the money, work, interface with the programs
That's
at the
huge.
State.
Yeah.
So some of these pieces that make it easy for a regular person to run their own micro school. So those were kind of the two pieces where technology can really step in and help. Again, going back to the human piece, which is all of what we're doing is trying to get to the place where an adult who cares can deliver real impact for a kid that needs it, right? And so that's the human connection that we're trying to facilitate.
I love that. I love that. Use technology to just clear out.
Yes.
Remove barriers.
Those barriers.
Yeah.
Talk to us about where the industry's headed, where micro school is headed. And I know it's catching on nationwide. I know after COVID, there were a lot of people that were rethinking the old industrial model that, you know, that we hear. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think what's happening is it's gradual. It's a gradual awakening, if you will. I think parents slipped into a pretty passive mode because the government long ago said, we're going to do this thing to your kids, right?
Shut up and color.
Exactly. And we'll take them when they're 5 and we'll give them back to you when they're 18 and they will be, you know, ready for jobs, like prepared for life, a success. I mean, that was ultimately the promise I think people believed.
And it's the social contract.
Yeah. It's this idea that, okay, I put them on the right escalator and maybe it's like I moved to a more expensive neighborhood and that's a better escalator, or I pay private school tuition and that's a better escalator. But ultimately it's a very passive stance by parents, right? Like, I just give you my kid and you do stuff to them to the point where they're ready for life. I think gradually there's been a disillusionment. I think this needed to happen for a long time.
Well, because some of the industry just went to a caretaking model.
Yeah, I think.
Or an entertainment model.
Right. Without spending, yeah. You know, and I don't try to spend energy sort of picking and poking at other people. I think the challenge is, you know, how can you, what should you be thinking as an enlightened consumer of education services? And we don't think of ourselves that way because we don't pay the money, but we're paying taxes and the government's providing a service.
Yeah.
As that, is this enough? Are you getting what you need? And the real answer is, in many cases, no. And in many cases, the answer to what I need is a different answer. So it's an impossible problem to solve from the top down. You really have to have lots of organic innovation. And that's why it's been fun to see, you know, microschools crop up that are focused on poetry and humanities, and then one that's very techy, and one that the kids are all doing sports together after school. And you can, it's not that you can have to choose one thing. I mean, there's eclectic mixes, that's but neat. Yeah, it's fun to see a kind of a diversity of focuses.
So you could realistically have micro schools that are fairly close to each other, but because they are differentiated, then
correct.
You just get more choice for the families. In
exactly.
The area. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's great. I didn't think about that. Talk to us about like some of the outcomes you've seen or some of the success stories. I'd love to hear what you're seeing at your level of the operations.
Yeah, I want to hear stories. And also, if you have any stories about, you know, you guys found your passion with work later in life, right? Uh-huh. But it sounds like you're facilitating finding their passion at a younger age. And so I'm curious if you have any stories about that.
Absolutely. So we basically measure two things. The mission of Prenda is two words. So we went real simple with this. It's empower learners. And really focusing on that word learner, some people would say, well, that's obvious. Of course, that's what you're doing in education. I would push back on that hard and say many institutions, that's whether it's stated or unstated, that's not what's going on. That's not really even the goal. Like, we're trying to do something different than really cultivate a learner. I mean, a learner makes a choice, right? A choice of learning. I choose to learn. I'm putting my will like out deliberate as a deliberate act, and I'm going to learn something. If you look around, you know, many kids are so overscripted and stretched that there's no time for them to even have will or choice or anything right. like that. So we've taken
there's
agency
no
completely off the table. So by sort of really focusing on that, it solves a lot of this, right? It opens up. And then beyond that, so it's be a learner. Empowered learners make a choice to learn, and then they get really good at it. And that, I think all of us who know.
That's a big deal.
What it feels That's like to be a learner.
Deal.
Yeah.
I hope everybody who's listening really hears that. I mean, once someone makes a decision
right.
to own their education.
Yes.
It's such a huge
It starts there
switch.
and then you know it doesn't just happen like that. It's work, right? It takes repeated iterations of falling down and getting back up. And so that's a lot of what we're trying to
do. And it's okay if they're not an empowered learner at 3.
Of course. Yeah. And in
or
fact
5 or
no one's really there, right? I mean, I consider myself a pretty empowered learner.
Yeah.
Like I was just wanting to do this, we were making like an internet quiz, and I was like learning all the stuff about the integrations between this service and how to do APIs. And I don't, you know, I don't have a CS degree, or no one gave me permission to do that. But like, still, I'm running into, wow, I'm not really good at that, or I limit myself, or I hold back, you know. So I think it's a lifelong quest. So if you put that out there and say that's the goal, right, which is big, audacious, I get that. Then you're looking for that. Okay, how do we know that's happening? Well, one, we're actually looking at social science measures of like empowerment as a learner. So things like locus of control. We'll literally ask kids, do you feel like things are happening to you, or you can like affect your life, or you have locus of control? Perceived locus of control correlates really well with good life outcomes. It's something we want for kids to have. And so much of the structure that they're used to in, you know, a more traditional system is inadvertently crushing that locus of control. It's just saying, literally, all I have to do is just be here. Like they can't control my brain. So
we're gonna give you the next worksheet.
My brain's gone. I'll do your stupid worksheets, and I will make it till the bell rings. And that's and that's why we get Ferris Bueller, right? The whole like anyone, you know, that's where that comes from. So we're looking at all of those types of measures, and then beyond that, of course, we look at, you know, actual outcomes. And I talked a little bit about mastery measures. We have kids that are moving. So one of my favorite stories of this, and this goes back a couple of years, is this boy named Calvin. We've done, we partnered with some public school districts, and we just said, look, a micro school would be a great format for some of the kids on your campus. And this kid in particular had been, he had been in trouble a little bit, right? He had had some behavior stuff. The parents were in the principal's office a lot. They kind of knew each other well. And he just was the type of kid that was like, in some ways, too smart for it all. Like, he didn't, he just wasn't okay with being treated as a, you know, Pavlovian dog or whatever. And so he saw through that system, gave everybody a hard time. And when the micro school opens on campus, the wise principal says, hey, I think this could be a fit for you. This boy comes in, and it turns out, even though his grades didn't reflect it, he has an affinity for and an interest in math that nobody knew about. And so to see this kid immediately get not start from a place of behind, fill gaps, become obsessed with it, like literally was taking, they called him like the math addict. He'd take his math home and just keep working on Khan Academy over the weekends. And then he finished not only, you know, coming from fifth grade level to get caught up at sixth grade level, but he was done with seventh grade level math by the time the year was over, and everybody in the class knew him to be the math expert. Like, that kid wouldn't have seen that type of, you know, that social stance or standing, because before he was the bad kid, right? And now he's the math wizard, right? It's just
feels that achievement.
Total different. And so think about carrying that with you now. It's like, all right, what's next? You know, what's my next challenge? What do math wizards even do? It's like, well, they probably go into finance and make a lot of money, or they, that's, you know, right, go into science and change the world or whatever. So you want those types of stories, and we get to see that happen over and over again.
Well, that'll give them confidence, in the other spaces, such as English language learning and maybe arts or music.
It's a great point. Build on it. Jared, I don't think people correctly estimate this. I think we consistently underrate this contagion of confidence. But one of the girls in my first micro school was really struggling with math. Math is sort of my specialty. Like, I love helping kids love math, not just do it right, but like get them to think about the curiosity and the puzzle and the fun of it. They'll sit and play video games forever. So it's like their brains want to work.
Yeah.
And a math problem is sitting here before you, giving you that opportunity. So I love the challenge of getting a kid to believe that and to build that confidence. Well, this girl goes from staring at problems and not even picking up a pencil, like just so afraid of this, to by the end of the year, like attacking problems with swagger. She didn't get every problem right, but she was definitely bold and emblazoned and ready to like tackle her math. Well, I go watch because my daughter plays softball with her. So we're out in a totally different context. And I was talking to the parents, and this girl hadn't swung a bat for like the whole previous season. She would just watch balls go by, so scared of doing it wrong or whatever. And I was like, I wonder how this will go. For very first pitch, she just gets up there and it's like, oh, wow. And I'm like, whoa, that's different. And the parents were like, what's going on? And I honestly, not you can like claim this, maybe it's just natural growth or maturity, but I think there's something incredibly powerful and contagious about just conquering, you know? And we actually call our mastery-based mode of learning, we call it conquer mode, because it's taking on a goal. It's often a goal that you've set for yourself. You take on that goal and then you achieve it. And it's this feeling, like you say, of just complete victory. It's like, I've done it, you know?
No, that's great.
And no, I believe that. Please. Gaining confidence in one area can really help you be brave and, you know, attempt to gain confidence in another area.
And I just love how you created an environment where people can discover their superpowers in a way that builds confidence, and then they just continue to ladder up.
Absolutely.
Level up if you're a gamer, right? And then start branching out.
Yeah.
And I think that's, a lot of times our model is based on let's fix weaknesses, you know, because we look at data and like, oh, well, they're deficient in English, or here's the cut scores or things like that. And to an extent, we do need to do that, right? An educated American does need to know how to read, write, and do arithmetic right, at the core, right? And we do need to know our American history and some basic science, right? Is everybody going to flourish in all of those disciplines? Maybe. There are some people that do, but most people really migrate to one or the other. And for them to be able to have the confidence to just continue in that and find how they can go do something great with the things that they are great at.
Yeah.
That's better than other people. That's just so emancipating in many, many ways.
Can I share just one more story? I know I'm telling too many, but just about what you say, because I was working with a boy in one of my early micro schools that was struggling on both English and math, right? And so you're looking at, okay, well, maybe English is a little easier, so let's build some confidence here, transfer that over and do math. But they were both hard for him. He was just facing challenges across both. And it was, every day was a struggle, right? Because like you say, we've taken the stance, and I think most people would, that those are kind of table stakes for participating in American society. You do need to learn them. Now, we're not gonna do it in a, like, bang you over the head with test scores and high stakes pressure. It's like, look, here's where you're at. I believe in giving kids an accurate look at their data, right? This is your mastery right now. Where do you wanna be? And this is what the kind of society has said, you know, your grade level would do. And not to say that's right, but let's, you know, figure out a path to where you want to end up. And we work with kids on that. Anyway, so this kid's struggling hard. He set these goals. He wants to catch up. He's not making the progress that he wants to make. And every day it just feels like, so you know, your heart's with him. It feels just like a slog. Every day's hard. Mm-hmm. One day we'd kind of taken a day off. We went to the library. My friend's the librarian over here, and he opens up all of the Lego Mindstorm robots for my class just to, like, okay, build stuff. So it's literally, and it's not organized, just a pile of Legos and motors and random stuff on the ground. And all, like, 9 of the 10 kids are just looking at it, like, bewildered, like, wow, what do I do? And this guy, he just, like, gets down there. This one, the same kid, right? Wow. English and math were hard. He gets down there, and he was the star. I mean, the feeling was almost like they were putting him on their shoulders and, like, cheering as they, like, leave the building. It was just, it was so cool to see him being the expert, you know, and he showed everybody, he's teaching them things and debugging their code and, like, helping them. And I was just like, this is amazing. Like, the world, you know, I think we just forget how multidimensional the world is. And we think about our standards or whatever. And we've been given a lot of that. And, you know, I understand that that's important, but it's like, to be able to see a whole human being is truly a gift. And so many of our guides, you know, we've worked with over 1,000 people that have started their own micro schools. You meet these people, they're passionate, they're driven, they care so much about the kids. And this is their superpower. They get in there and they can see a human and then understand that there's lots of ways to do human, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we're a big fan of the Kolbe assessment. I don't know if you've ever taken a Kolbe.
I've seen it. I haven't done
score, but it measures, it's different than, like, the IQ test that measures some intelligence levels. They call it, is it conative? Meaning, how do you get things done? Mm. You know, like, how do you work?
Right.
And it's an evaluation. And like, I'm one of the guys that likes to do data and concepts and vision, but other people get work done by, they don't do that, but they need to, like, just take a piece of wood and start working it, or Legos and working it, or clay, or they learn through their hands. And I don't think schools in the traditional setting really cater a lot to that. They cater more to my profile, which is more conceptual. These people thrive in labs where they just need to touch it, they need to feel it, they need to smell it, they need to look at it. You know, this is how they look, this is how they learn through those. And they just soar when they're in the right educational context.
Right.
And that's what this assessment does, is it tells you, how do you get stuff done? Because people have different ways to get stuff done. And those people are very effective when they're in the right context, when they have the Lego sets,
or
they're in the science labs, but they might not be the best person to, you know, conceptualize something because it's not their superpower, but they will easily soar
and
with a pile of Legos. If we have a listener that's interested in Prenda, either from a participant standpoint or a guide standpoint, share a few of the challenges that they would face, or at least realistic checkpoints that they would need to think of to make sure that if they choose this for their children or for them, how they could be successful.
Yeah, I would say the big challenge is that flip the flipped switch that we talked about early on in this conversation. If you are really wanting sort of a passive solution that someone else does for you, it's not going to work, right? If you've instead made the jump of, I'm going to be part of the solution. I mean, you've heard this forever. Parents, you know, will sit and talk at the park about the teacher and the admin and the school. And it's very easy to sort of have complaints, right? Everybody has complaints. I think the question is, now that you're given an opportunity, this is a genuine invitation to not just complain, but to be part of a solution, to co-create solutions.
So if a parent has a child that is self-motivated learner, this is a layup. How do you, what would you say to the parent that wants that, they desire that,
yeah,
but they don't see their children right now as being self-motivated? What do you think?
Well, and also, can you explain what grades Prenda serves?
Yeah, so Prenda serves K through 8. And, you know, I think it's a common misconception because you look at things like online programs where it's like, you really, it works really, really well if a kid's already intrinsically driven. Yeah. What I would say about a micro school is it's so social and so interactive and so connective that it's actually the perfect environment to become that. And we have a lot of kids that don't start out that way, right? Now, there is a choice. There's agency involved. And I think you want to do this with your children. Say, hey, here's this thing. Here's a 10-minute webinar on Prenda.com, and that's a real thing. You can like watch a video. This is what a micro school is. Watch it with your kid. Say, hey, would that work for us? Like, what would that look like? And your wheels are thinking logistically. Your kid's just thinking, would I love school that way? And if you get that buy-in that they're willing to do that, you can always, if it doesn't work, you can go back to traditional. That will always
give
be there.
Yeah.
But I think what we see is kids inside of that environment, there's something about, one, a guide who knows me, cares about me, and has like time and energy to be able to devote individual attention. That's
a big deal.
That's default. And then above that, I've got a group. There's a team dynamic, and we're very deliberate about this. We put a lot of work into building culture. We talk about values and how to be as citizens and learners, together. And so you get these environments where it's just beautiful. You'll see like that class that I was talking about that was referring to their buddy as the math addict. And they knew like, let's go to him. If I have a question about math, they celebrate that. This kid that was struggling in math and English, but like excelled at Lego robotics. They were so impressed and just carry each other. It really brings out some of the best parts of humanity. And I think that's maybe what's been missing when you have the very top-down kind of factory model is, it's hard to feel like a human in that model. So a micro school allows for that organic learning to happen and in a way that's pretty
great.
Cool.
When we talk about school choice, I always tell people, start with who you are and your children. What are your children's interests and desires in learning? And, what are their inclinations? If you don't know your children very well, and some parents know them better than others, it's hard. School choice is frustrating. It's super frustrating. But when you do know and or what your aspirations are for your family, and then you can tell really quick whether this is going to work. But even if it's not, still don't close the door.
Right.
Yeah, I have some questions too. So a common question is, at Prenda, would a kindergartner be in the same, home class as an eighth grader? How is that broken up? And then I have another question.
Yeah, usually not. So most of the guides, just knowing that they're going to need to provide that individual but also collective experience, it's hard to do a Socratic discussion if one kid's trying to operate at eighth grade level and one's at a kindergarten level. So what we'll typically see grouped is kind of a K through two, like Montessori grouping, so K through two. Mixed age is beautiful. I just witnessed this yesterday in a mixed age classroom where one of the younger kids was giving her writing to one of the older students who was giving feedback, coaching, and you could tell more than just the actual substance of what she was giving her, she was getting this reinforcement that really brought learning to life for her. So there's beautiful, and there's lots of research about mixed age.
Collaboration, connection, no matter what your age.
We like it, but there are limits to it. There are people who do it, who will run a full kind of K through 8 micro school. Oftentimes those are in pretty rural areas where there's no like logistical way. But more likely, if you're in a suburb or something, you get three moms together or three adults, and one of them runs the little kids, one's the middles, and one's the olders, and they're sibling groups that are kind of transferring between, and they do field trips together and then some of those things. So you get these beautiful kind of community-driven things happening.
Oh, and then my other question is, I think as we're talking about school choice and how micro schools sort of satisfies, and we talked about, we introduced the school choice with jobs to be done, and so it's, I think people who just think that, a public district is it down the street, right? And then they might open their mind to a charter, and that might solve, a problem for them. And so I love that there's all these different options to find out what is best for your kids. Even my son goes to a small charter school, and it's been great. And he used to love learning, but now he's not loving learning anymore. Uh-huh. And I can do what I can do at home, but I really feel like maybe it's the environment he's in right now, and I have this like gap year. So I think, something like this could be worth looking at. you know, especially we can cut this out of the podcast if we want, but he got sent to the principal's office Monday or Tuesday for they were in the hallway after lunch, and they're supposed to have their like hands behind their back, quietly in line after lunch to walk to the next, you know, to the classroom. And the lunch lady was giving the girls high fives. And so the boys started doing high fives to each other down the hallway. And they got in trouble because they're supposed to have their hands behind their back. They got sent to the principal. And so this whole week, those boys who were giving high fives have to eat their lunch by themselves, spread out in the front office all week long.
Wow.
And I was like, ah. Really? Like, really? Being buddies, high fives, like I understand the need for some sort of, you know, organization and quiet at certain times and not disrupting like other classrooms and stuff. But
totally,
they kind of were like just doing what the lunch lady, the lunch monitor was doing.
It's funny that it was her herself. That
Someone else was the one.
Yeah.
That anyway, so I'm just like, you know, this, I can see why my son is frustrated in this environment.
Yeah.
And feels like I have to do this. And I'm constantly in trouble, even though he's not. But,
right,
you know, I will acknowledge when they are being stinkers.
Sure.
But but in most cases, I'm like, oh, not this again.
Yeah.
So not that I'm, you know, looking for a place that has no accountability.
Yeah.
But I do think that in this gap year, you know, I definitely am like other parents that maybe are looking for other solutions in the interim.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things with kids that people just consistently miss, right? One is there's so much more difference and diversity and richness of differences. I mean, this is true about humans. I think we can accept that at some level about humans generally, but with kids, we want to sort of run them through our system and do it a certain way. So there's so much more. The second thing about kids is they're so perceptive and smart, and they understand all of it. So when they ask you a question, what they're really asking is first, like, am I okay for you? Like, are we good? Is this all right? And they're getting the answer no way too often in these structures. So it's not to say like drop all discipline, drop all accountability. I joked, like, my kids in my micro schools, every one of them cried at some point in the year, right? Just through sheer like agony and exasperation. Learning is hard. It's messy. It's so hard.
It's work.
And they got busted from me, you know, like I asked them for more than what they were currently giving me in terms of both positive and negative. Like, don't do that thing. It's counterproductive to what we're trying to create here. You can do a lot when you've got that foundation of connection. And I think if you were to sort of summarize one of the big problems with trying to do a big top-down monolithic system, you know, and I'm friends with leadership at large school districts. I really think they're good people. I think they're trying, but they're structurally, if you've got one decision to make for tens of thousands of human beings, like, you got one lever, you can't drive it well, right? You need more levers.
Blunt instrument.
Yeah, it's just a blunt instrument. So I think what ultimately needs to happen is recognizing that, seeing the differences, and then trying so hard, like, let's make it possible so that those environments can be different so that they can meet the needs of more kids.
Kelly, I love this. I think this is great. You know, the home, I think when we think of the American classroom, you have to start at the home. And it is the American classroom. It's the first American classroom is the home, and it will always be the American classroom. Schools, whatever form they take, are extensions of the home, and you've embellished the home in a really unique way with just amazing ideas and systems and processes to make the home even more effective. One thing that we don't like to say too much around formal traditional education is some of the greatest Americans ever were really educated in the home. Franklin, Lincoln, Washington.
Yeah.
Right.
John Quincy Adams.
I mean,
a pretty good experience.
It really, yeah, exactly. He was he knew a little something.
They sent him to Russia when he was 13 or something.
Amazing.
Yeah, great.
I mean, these were people educated in their home in obviously different contexts and things like that, but they had some of the same underlying concepts and principles. And I told you the story before we started recording about a panel I set on years ago about new standards that were being introduced in the U.S. And I made the comment that early colonial America had higher literacy rates, because it's factually true. And we don't like to acknowledge that because it didn't come, you know, after the Horace Mann model that we're basically under right now. But It's true. And the home is great, and love what you're doing there. And as we wrap up, anything else that you want to listen to, share with our listeners relative to either Prenda or the micro school industry that would be useful?
Yeah, I think we got a pretty good cover. Now, it's good to know that, you know, Prenda's got a point of view, and you've kind of heard me articulate it today. We're really trying hard to be mission-driven in everything we do, all of our design. You know, we have multiple kind of education challenges that we're trying to really nudge the way people think about learning in a different way. But my answer is, you know, I want kids to be empowered learners. There are other answers, and I don't want to tell everybody that their answer is their answer. So I guess my invitation to people listening or thinking about this is just to get as clear as you can with yourself about what's important to you, you know? And as you think about learning, when I send my kid to school, what am I really looking for? What do I hope happens? I think coming from that clarity, or here's another Socrates, know thyself, right? If you can start there, I think you're just much better positioned to be able to make good choices for your family.
Oh, that's great.
Are there any states that Prenda is not in?
So we are available in all 50 states. In 46 of those states, people just pay out of pocket to do it. It's a private model. Typically, these micro schools cost less than, you know, private school tuition, but, you know, it still can be $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a year, something like that. In Arizona, Utah, New Hampshire, and Florida, we're working in partnership with state programs. So the program is paid for. You can participate in Prenda without coming out of pocket. That's important to us. A lot of our families wouldn't be able to afford even the kind of low cost tuition that we're talking about.
And I'm glad you brought that up. In our last podcast with Jenny Clark, she mentioned how there's probably 4 or 5 states that are enabling legislation that's similar to the Empowerment Scholarship Act that we talked quite a bit. So
yeah,
that might be something if you don't have a funding source, or you're worried about that, and you're interested in Prenda or micro schools, maybe check in with your legislature, see what that, because that wave is coming.
Absolutely.
And I think it is only going to give tailwind to great models like this and great learning opportunities. Kelly, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a fun discussion, and congratulations on everything you did. And we'd just like to remind the listeners that if you like what you heard and you find this useful for you and learning and expanding how we understand the American classroom, we'd encourage you to support us by, of course, clicking all the like and shares, and give us a good rating on whatever podcast platform you listen to, and we'll be able to do more of these. So again, Kelly, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.